Hello, this is Leslie Scarra. I'm founder and CEO of Merlin Development, and this is my fifth podcast for prepared foods focusing on technology issues. This one is entitled Creating More Healthful Foods, Part 2, Managing the Psychological Drivers of Liking. Last month, I covered the basics of physiological drivers of liking. Today, I'm turning towards psychological drivers, which, as it turns out, can powerfully influence the liking or disliking of a food. Again, I'd like to credit Dr. Zeta Vickers of the Department of Food Science at the University of Minnesota for providing me with a very useful distillation of research in this area, which forms the basis for this podcast. There are two major categories of psychological drivers of liking: exposure and associative conditioning. It's difficult to test the effect of exposure alone on liking, separated from the effect of food composition. But one researcher did it and showed that the number of tastings of food went up, liking increased as well. If you think about it, an unfamiliar food tastes better as you become more familiar with it. The effect of exposure is likely one contributor to the increased liking. It also suggests that exposure may be an important tool to drive liking for a food form that may not possess innate drivers of liking. Whole grain breads could fall in this category. Whole grains are often somewhat bitter, and the textures associated with them are sharp and rough, both of which fall in the category of those that are innately disliked. If, for example, whole grain breads are substituted repeatedly for refined white breads, liking for those whole grain foods is likely to increase simply due to increased exposure. The more surprising effects on liking come from evaluative conditioning. This is the transfer of the affect from one object or situation to another by conditioning. Flavor-flavor evaluative conditioning is a common way to learn to like a food. Coffee is bitter and triggers the innate dislike of bitterness. However, many people learn to like coffee by drinking it with sugar initially, using the innate liking of sweet. Eventually, those people may well learn to like coffee without sugar. Infants are often introduced to cereal with juice, which is sweet, or with formula, which is familiar, to facilitate liking. Foods which may not be liked alone, such as mushrooms, can be battered and fried to increase liking. And going back to the whole grains food example, whole grain bread formulas often include a significant sweet component, such as honey, to compensate for the bitterness inherent in the grains. Another psychological driver is to attach a value to a food. This can have positive or negative effects on liking. One study looked at the context in which snack foods were consumed and the effect on liking. If a food was given as a reward for good behavior, liking increased the most. If a food was given in a positive context, but not as a direct reward, liking also increased, but not as much. If food was given in a non-social context, liking was unchanged. Have you ever noticed that food served at a party tastes better than the same food served at home in a normal context? That your children like pancakes better at the neighbor's house than the exact same pancakes served at home? Pizza benefits from this. Advertising for pizza usually shows it being consumed in a fun context, like a party. Your teenagers associate pizza with fun, which enhances their liking for pizza, and probably for the specific type of pizza served by their friends. Many snack foods, like potato chips and Doritos, which already use all the tools afforded by the innate drivers of liking, also benefit from the fact that they are often consumed in positive social contexts, like parties or group settings. Children's pre-sweetened cereals may also have gained a boost in liking when they were paired with Saturday morning TV. The data suggests that less well-liked foods could benefit from intentional pairing with positive social contexts. Serve vegetables in a fun way at a party instead of chips. Advertise non-sweetened cereals in a fun context on Saturday cartoons. The idea of a food as a reward can have either a positive or a negative effect on liking, depending on the specific context. If I reward myself for a good workout with chocolate, I may be further enhancing my liking for chocolate because of the context in which I consume it. We know from the study I mentioned before that consuming a food as a reward increases the liking for that food. But if the situation is reversed, such as giving a reward for the consumption of a food, the liking for that food decreases. The classic example here is rewarding consumption of vegetables with a desirable activity. In this instance, vegetable consumption appears to be so undesirable that you need a reward to do it. So, while rewarding vegetable consumption may get your kids to eat their vegetables, you may be instilling a lifelong dislike for vegetables, which actually have very few real sensory reasons for dislike. Associating a food with a hero or admired peers can also drive increased liking. This phenomenon has been proven in a controlled study. You may well have observed it in your own home when your teenage son, who has just started high school, suddenly loves a food he previously hated. Upon questioning him, you learn that this new food like is the result of preferences for the food in his new peer group. General Mills understands this when they put a celebrity on the Wheaties box. The milk board advertisers use this with their celebrity choices for the Got Milk campaign, and then they add a bit of fun with the milk mustache. Presumably, spinach consumption increased when Popeye was a popular cartoon. My last point for today regards the association of a food with some good value, such as health, ethical treatment for animals, natural, organic, etc. This association does not affect liking. It may influence choice, which may in turn result in exposure, which will then gradually increase liking. But liking itself is not affected directly. So, the psychological drivers of liking are powerful and pervasive. Indeed, they may have as much control over food liking as we developers have with our formulas. The next question for the food industry is how can we better use both physiological and psychological drivers of liking to develop and sell well-liked, healthy foods? We'll explore that question in my next podcast in May. And again, my thanks to Dr. Zeta Vickers for her significant contribution to the material that I have presented here. Thank you, and good day.